Welcome to the Phi Life Podcast. I'm John Barbin, and with me is Brad Pilon. And today we're going to talk about a marketing, fitness claims, marketing claims, health and diet, and why Brad and I, as Canadian, as living in Canada and Canadians, kind of view it, I guess, differently or would say different things than our American counterparts simply because of the legislation in Canada versus the States and kind of what we're generally exposed to on an ongoing basis and how it actually forms the way we view what's, I guess, acceptable, what limits are, and what limits aren't in what we can and can't say.
I think it almost just comes down to why, as a whole, Canadians just aren't as good as marketing the concept of health, fitness, nutrition, weight loss as our American friends are. And it's solely just it's a cultural bias, really. We're not exposed to the same type of media onslaught and advertising that our American friends are. I can't recall, other than visiting the States, the last time I've seen a weight loss commercial that was for anything other than Jenny Craig or Weight Watchers. But I'm sure that our American friends listening to this could probably name off the four or five commercials they've seen today that was for either a pharmaceutical or a dietary supplement.
Right, and those are things that we won't see on our commercials, even though we'll be watching similar television shows. The commercial, I don't know if some people don't realize it, but the commercials will be different. So, you know, so someone, someone in Kansas City and someone here in Toronto could be watching, you know, the same television show at 9 o'clock on CBS, but the commercials are completely different.
Absolutely, yeah. And even how I mentioned that we have Jenny Craig and Weight Watchers, the claims, the tone of the commercials are actually also much different. Because I have seen the equivalent Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig ads in the States, and they are different. So, as a society, you know, we haven't been bombarded with the how fast you can lose weight and how and. Even in our weight loss commercials, we don't see a transformation of a average person to a fitness model. You know, our weight loss commercials, specifically for people like, again, Jenny Craig, Weight Watchers, are clothed people shrinking to be smaller clothed people. We don't do the guy in bathing suit transformed into fitness model men's health cover in bathing suit. We don't see that typically here. So we're just not as accepting of this concept, right? So a simple claim like lose 30 pounds in 30 days would just, any Canadian would hear that claim and be like, what, wait, and the math part of our brain start going, you'd be like, that would be a, you know, at least a 3,500 calorie deficit every day for 30 days. That's very unlikely, probably not possible. I don't think so. Let's see the evidence. Whereas a lot of people in the States, because they've seen this claim or similar claims all the time, would be like, yeah, all right, whatever. Boring. That's not impressive. So it's a difference in what we've been exposed to and what our, actually, if you think about it, what our governments allow us to be exposed to, that's really affected how each group of people view weight loss and weight loss claims.
Yeah, it's, I mean, obviously we're speaking in general. It's, I mean, each person's kind of has their own take on it. And I never sort of considered that until you brought it up. And then I started thinking about, yeah, you know, the advertising is different. And I can see how someone who isn't in the industry, who's not sort of researching this stuff and coming up with their own products and claims, I can see how you'd get caught up in it and just after time start accepting the fact that, you know, some larger number claim that you hear constantly, whether it be 20 pounds in a month or 30, whatever it is, if you see it and hear it sort of all the time, I can see how, as illogical as it may be, you'd sort of just get used to it, and somewhere in the back of your mind, you're just used to, oh, that must be, you know, if they keep saying it, somehow that might be possible.
Yeah, you almost get immune to it, too.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Like, your BS radar or your sort of skeptical eye for it sort of gets diminished because you're just, you hear it so often.
I think one of the sort of interesting flashbacks for me is thinking back to the supplement industry. And being a Canadian, working in a Canadian company, my friends, family, and people I ran into in Canada, you know, when I told them what I did for a living, almost the first thing that came out of their mouth, especially if they've had a drink or two, is like, dude, how do you get away with saying the stuff you do? Right? And it was always about the claims, the things we say. Whereas anytime I was visiting the States, the question was typically like, so does this stuff work? Right? So they're still, you know, hesitant about whether or not it worked. But in Canada, we were very focused on the claim and how do you say it and that kind of thing. Whereas in the States, it was, they didn't seem to care. They just wanted to know if the product worked or not. So I think there's just a massive cultural bias in terms of our approach to these things. We should also point out that our governments regulate the claims you can make on a label in an advertisement differently.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like a supplement in a Canadian supplement store versus an American supplement store cannot have the claims that in Canada you can't have the same claims as you can have in the States on the same product categories.
Exact same formula sometimes even.
Not even just the same product category, but the same formula in many cases. So,
and to be clear, I mean the claim can be legit. The claim can be legally defensible in the United States, and in Canada it's like we don't care. It's not going on that label, right? That's sort of how the regulations work. So being sheltered from that sort of those type of words, that type of advertising has made the Canadian consumer and even the Canadian working in that industry much different in their approach, right? We rationalize things a lot more. We explain our claims a lot more. We feel the need to defend our claims. Whereas when you look at our U.S. counterparts, they just hit them hard and move on because to them there's nothing weird or strange about them. So again, it's just a really interesting cultural bias to look at and explore. I don't think a lot of people have actually thought about.
And there's a few different levels of exposure there. So there's the print advertising, so in magazines. Then there's the visual advertising in commercials, and then I guess you could, on websites as well. And then there's the advertising or the claim you see on the bottle. So all three of those levels of exposure in each country, they're going to be different. So when you sort of cross-reference, you see something on TV, you're like, huh, that's interesting. Then you read about it in a magazine, and then you go see it on the store shelf. The idea is for all of those messages to be consistent, and consistent within a country, though. So they're consistently more conservative in Canada, I guess you could say, throughout all three sort of steps, whereas in the United States, they're consistently more liberal with what they can say. And you know, the UK is different, and then Australia will be different again. So when you see them all put together, it's, you know, the different forms of media, like the label itself, then a magazine, then a TV ad, and they all kind of are saying the same thing. And then you just cross a border, and they're all of a sudden saying a different thing, even though it's the same product. It's, I mean, I don't think too many people would even think about this, but I mean, we're sort of in the middle of it, so we kind of notice these things.
Yep. I can remember, what is that? I'm trying to remember the name of that ad. It hit on all the radio stations. I believe it was late 2009, and it was something about, like, losing 30 pounds. It was a like a cleanse product.
Oh, yeah, and the 25 pounds that you can't lose with diet or exercise.
That's the one. And I remember listening to it and thinking, oh, here we go. I mean, you're using – you're probably a really, really good, well-working U.S. ad, and you've just thought, oh, if it worked in the States, it'll work in Canada. And I can just remember listening to that and going, oh, guys, no, like you're going to hurt your budget, because it's a the kind of shock and awe advertising that it probably not, I mean, not 100%, but just doesn't fly quite as well in Canada. People aren't going to be driven from that to pick up the phone and order five bottles of stuff. Whereas I know a lot of Canadian companies who've had amazing success in Canada with any sort of, not just diet and weight loss, but sort of any sort of supplement. And then brought that exact same advertising campaign down to the States and lost millions. So just you know, I don't think there's anything really to this call other than just sort of saying, huh, isn't that interesting, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of a revelation we had that we sort of came across. I don't know. I don't even know how this came up. I know you mentioned it to me the other day, and I was like, yeah, I guess it is different. And it's hard to notice it unless you, like, take yourself out of the place you're in and put yourself somewhere else to look back and be like, wow, that is different. For example, and I know when we worked in the supplement stores, people always, or at least we used to always tell people that the American version of a supplement was stronger, quote, stronger, because it had different ingredients that the Canadian version would never allow. So there was this, at least in the sort of bodybuilding supplement field, at the store level, when people came in, there was this belief that the American version was always more potent because there was this belief that there was tighter restrictions in Canada on what could be in it and more liberal, loose restriction in the state so you could have more powerful ingredients. So it was a selling feature. We'd be like, well, you know, the Canadian one's on the shelf, but we've got the American one under the counter, and that one's better. And every guy believed it.
Actually, there was one of the supplement companies, to remain nameless, actually did as a logo splash on the PDP, primary display panel, basically the front of their label, and it was U.S. formula. Because they knew in Canada, like, wow, we put that in a label, more people probably buy it.
Mm-hmm. That's a perfect example of the difference between the way people view what's in a supplement, its potency, and any of that stuff. So it's definitely a marketing feature, and it's amazing it went from, in the case you just mentioned, it went from being a sort of an underground idea to something the companies were like, hey, we'll put it right on the label. We'll point this out. And incidentally, those products aren't technically supposed to be crossing the border. So the Canadian formula is supposed to be the only one available in Canada. But the issue is the print media. And here's an interesting point about the different pieces of media lining up. There's not necessarily a Canadian and an American version of many of the bodybuilding magazines.
That's true too.
So there's one version, and it's usually the American one. And so a guy who picks up Muscle and Fitness in Canada, he sees the ads as regulated for the American market, but he also sees them here in Canada. So the formula promoted in the ad in Muscle and Fitness, even though it's sitting on a Canadian magazine rack, it's actually promoting the American formula. So when he goes to the store, he's like, wait a minute, I read about an ingredient just now, but how come, where is it? Why isn't it in this product? So that's kind of where the belief that they need the American version here.
Oh, totally. And that may explain why the group of people in Canada who are the most accepting of claims, who are the most believing, would be the bodybuilders, because they're the one group who would be exposed to Flex, Muscle and Fitness, Muscular Development, all those magazines on a regular basis, right? So they're the ones who are probably like, yeah, no, that makes sense. You know, they're a bit more immune to the claim, a bit more accepting, as opposed to someone who doesn't read those magazines and instead is just exposed to the general TV and commercials along those lines.
Yeah, I guess we should clarify that when we speak of people who want the American version, that's always just limited to bodybuilding supplements. They're 90% of supplements. I don't think people have that kind of cross exposure, assuming the American versions. I don't think people think the American version of a vitamin supplement is more powerful than the Canadian or anything
right,
like
exactly.
that.
Yeah. So the question would be, I mean, if this is just same continent across a border, you know, you can imagine what the claims must sound like or be like in Italy versus United States or Spain or Germany or even England, Scotland, those areas. Like the degree to which the claims are accepted or not accepted would just be really based on if you've heard them enough. I like it when we talk about bodybuilding and we talk about how, you know, the body does have a limit to how much muscle it can add, right? And it's always interesting arguing that point with some people who are always sort of pro, you know, any sort of supplement that's amazing effects on protein synthesis. And we're just like, well, you know, we don't know how big of a difference it'll make. And then the person's always like, well, I'm sure it'll make a difference. And then our response would be, well, you know, I can guarantee you that in 6 months you're not going to be 500 pounds heavier. And they're like, of course not. That's stupid. We're like, and you're not going to be 200 pounds heavier. And they're like, of course not. We'll probably go, well, you're not going to be 50 pounds. And they'll probably agree, like, yeah, that'd be stupid too. And their breaking point of if we said you're probably not going to be 10 pounds heavier, and they're like, ooh, no, I bet I will be. I mean, there's no reason to pick that number 10 as being more legitimate than the 50 or even the 100, except for that's the one you've probably seen in the marketing it so much that you're like, when you do a quick rationalization in your head, you're like, no, 10 makes sense. So if all the marketing all at once was like gain 100 pounds of muscle in 6 months, then if we told, you know, an average person who's like, I think this supplement works, and we're like, well, what do you expect to put on like 100 pounds in 6 months? They'd be like, well, yeah. Right? So the numbers you accept and what you, you know, categorize into rational versus irrational is probably just really related to the degree in which you've seen those numbers and you've seen them in advertising mostly. So it's funny that our level of acceptance of different claims is just based on how often we've seen them as opposed to how logical they are.
Yeah, and even, I mean, obviously I don't think anyone would ever believe in a 100-pound claim, but as long as the number you've seen in advertising, you can somehow rationalize in your head that somebody in a gym somewhere got that result. So maybe I mean, so it really stretches what you can comprehend logically. So if you actually believe you can put on 20 pounds of muscle in a month or two, but you've never seen anyone do it, you've never seen anyone at your gym do it, you're not really sure it's – like you don't have any proof. You've just seen it in advertising claims. That's – I mean, there's another stretch there. Like you actually can't reference anybody who's actually done it, so to speak. So it's I can see how that – the constantly hearing the claim, constantly seeing it in a select group in magazines, mm-hmm. Doesn't really even add up to the reality that you see around you, but you'll still sort of hope to believe that it's true anyways.
Yeah, totally. It's just, yeah, you're just a product of your environment more than you probably think you are. And then, I mean, that just relates directly to your ability to even market and make money in a field. Right? It's just if you're constantly exposed to if you know what the highest sort of claim level that a population of people is willing to accept, and that's the claim you hit, well, then you're going to be making good money. But if your level of acceptance is way below that, right? So, like typical online sort of stuff, if you're like, well, you know, with a good diet and exercise program, you're going to lose, you know, 1 or 2 pounds a week. And if someone else is like, oh, with a good diet and exercise program like mine, you're going to lose 5 or 10 pounds in a week. Maybe you're not comfortable saying that, but he is, but then the profit's going to go to him. And it's not that he's lying or anything. If anything, all that person is doing is just displaying their exposure to that claim versus yours, right? You're not comfortable making those claims because you've never seen them made before. And then the other person can be more uncomfortable making those claims because he's seen them 15 times that day already on TV commercials, on the radio, and then in magazines.
Yep. So I noticed this when I moved from Canada to the United States. I lived in Florida for a year. And I never believed in the concept of a national identity. Like, I don't really consider myself a flag-waving Canadian or anything like that. I think people are just people. It doesn't really matter where you are. But I noticed I had all kinds of preconceived notions and biases when I moved there that came out when I just, you know, I went to do something and I noticed, oh, I really don't. This is different, even though it's just North America and the two countries, you know, once you're just sort of busy doing your thing, it's relatively indistinguishable lifestyles. There's just all kinds of little nuances that, you know, anyone who's moved to a different country knows what I'm talking about. You just have things that you're used to doing, and that's just from being immersed in a society, but that means that comes with it all kinds of other meanings about exposure to claims of like how liberal or how conservative are the laws in that country that allow you to say or not say things and hear things or not hear things, and just goes on and on and on. And then, you know, you go to another place and you're like, wow, things are said differently here. What can be said is different. And on one extreme, you have communist countries where lots of stuff is suppressed. And then I guess you go to the freer markets in North America where a lot more stuff can be said. And then somewhere on that spectrum, we all live somewhere. And then we kind of are just used to the amount of stuff that can be said wherever we are. And this minute we go somewhere else, it just all changes.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the wrap up the five life of this is just to be, I guess it's just to be aware of the fact that a lot of your beliefs, your acceptances, what you believe to be okay and not okay is a large, I'm trying to word this properly, largely influenced by where you live and where you grew up and what you've been exposed to. Which may seem, when you word it that way, it seems obvious, but in so many parts of our lives, you don't really realize that, you know, that's what's going on.
And now that may sound obvious, but the reason it's worth commenting on is because we're all still human and we're all still made of the same stuff. So yep. One of those claims is more accurate than the other. Or
that is a good point.
Yep. Or the exposure, the limit or the degree or the thing that can be said in one place but not in another, which of the two places is closer to what's actually sort of possible.
Exactly.
So if you have five countries with five different rules on what they are allowing marketers or to say as far as a weight loss claim or a muscle building or any industry, any health claim, one of those countries clearly must be closer to it than the other four. So, but which one is it?
And that's the hard part. Yeah. When countries have different regulations on health and stuff like that, and not specifically towards their beliefs or what's right or what's wrong, but when it actually comes down to their displaying of the facts of what is possible or impossible, and they're all different, that's when you got a problem, because just like you said, one of them is more right than the others.
Well, yeah, it has to be. There's got to be some because again, when it's not like people are that much different anywhere in the world. People can lose weight at about the same rate. They can build muscle at about the same rate. The stuff they're going to be able to do that will be the same things. So how is it possible that one country lets people say one thing and another country something else?
Exactly.
So you just got to get used to the lay of the land where you are and kind of use some reason, some logic and reason to the things you're hearing.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's sort of the perfect way to wrap it up, right? Just, again, just being aware that people's diehard beliefs, you know, could just be a result of what they've been exposed to, especially in diet and fitness, right? So, we're going on a national level, but it could come all the way down to the city they live in, how their parents raised them, et cetera. So it's just important to remember all these things when you look at someone and be like, oh, dude is just lying through his teeth, or, you know, that lady's clueless, when in actual fact, they may not be. They're telling you the diehard truth from their view.
Yeah.
Right. They don't see anything wrong with it, right? In their eyes, it's wrong. And especially when it's sort of more of an opinion-based thing and not straight fact, well, then you always have to sort of turn a microscope around and be like, or wait, you know, am I the one who's culturally being very biased here? But just a fine life, a way to put it all together is remember that we're all the same, we're all human, is that we do have preconceived notions just based on our geography more than anything else.
Yeah, and that's kind of – that'll be out of your control and out of your awareness until you listen to this podcast and then start realizing it. Yeah, and then from there, you'll at least know that, oh, when you think of something, you're like, oh, that comes based on all of the assumptions and where I've come from. And that's part of why you think the way you think at this, you know, at this point on any of those things. And again, that's not just our industry. That's probably every industry you're exposed to, every marketing claim. There's a set of legislation that controls to some degree what can and can't be said. So it's like that's kind of across the board.
Yeah, done.
All right, you got anything else?
No, that's about it. You?
No, I don't think we're good.
Perfect. All right, let's close this off.
All right, so for Brad Peel, and I'm John Barbin, and that's your Phi Life Podcast.